good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, May 21st. I'm your humble host, PK, and I'm here every Monday evening at bbsradio.com, Station 2, 855 Pacific, 1055 Central, 1155 Eastern. And before I go on with my intellectual wisdom and info, I, as always, want to pay homage to the suits, the shake movers and shakers at bbsradio.com, and to thank them and praise them, as always, for their support of free speech, free press, constitutional freedom, free inquiry, and promoting alternative media. And thank goodness for the internet and alternative media, because it is not under the corporate Zionist pro-Israel control of the status quo, and it is not under the CIA control, which the CIA is very involved in the other networks and also the media and universities. Here they don't control the station or me, and I'd also like to say hello to all those pricks from the CIA and the FBI and the National Security that are listening, because they would certainly like a show like mine off the air. They just tolerate it because there's nothing they can really do about it yet, but they don't like what I have to say. They don't like what other people who speak the truths that I speak like to say. They want us to be just sheeple, good sheeple who obey, and as they continue to manipulate the truth and the media. In fact, I found out yesterday, I had always believed and pretty much known that the CIA was heavily involved in whacking JFK. Come to find out, they also edited many frames out of the Magruder tape of the JFK assassination. They had gotten a hold of the tape, and over the week, that weekend, right after the killing, they edited it. So what we've seen all these years is minus a lot of frames. And again, the CIA, also known as the Cocaine Importation Agency, the CIA is the master of deception, as are their partners in Britain's MI6 and Israel's Mossad. And as I've said before, I think Israel's Mossad was heavily involved in 9/11. With some possible help or black ops help from CIA. I don't believe that Bush knew about it. I think he was kept out of the loop, but I think that Cheney definitely knows something about it. I would have, as much as I'm opposed to torture, I would have no problem with waterboarding Cheney, since he thinks enhanced interrogation techniques are fine and constitutional. So I would like to see Cheney definitely – I could see Cheney waterboarded to get some information out of him as concerning 9/11, because he was conducting a NORAD stand-down, because planes are always scrambled pretty much immediately when a commercial airline or whatnot goes off course. But not that day. Plus, of course – there's almost 100 TV cameras observing the Pentagon, and they have not released the plane footage of the so-called plane hitting the building. They just released maybe a 10-second frames of it several years ago, and it looks like a little silver streak hitting the building. So I don't believe the government's lies, obviously, on this either. And there's architects and engineers opposed to who want to see a private investigation into 9/11, because they think it's BS also, as of course I do. Anyway, yes, the CIA is not a friend of the people. Of course, it's all wrapped up in patriotism, but the CIA is behind most of the drone attacks in Afghanistan, Pakistan. They're behind that. They're not even authorized to do that. I still would like to know where the CIA gets its marching orders from. This is something I would like to know. I don't think it's the president. I don't know if it's – is it the globalists, the New World Order? Who gives them their – where do they get their marching orders? So they've been doing this stuff for years. But now, thanks to the internet, it's harder for the status quo, New World Order, Bilderberger, Trilateralist, CFR crowd to control information. And for those who say, oh, that's just conspiracy talk. Oh, really? Well, I'll guarantee you this. Who do you think would scream the loudest if we wisely withdrew from the unconstitutional membership in NATO, the UN, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, CAFTA, the Export-Import Bank? Who do you think would scream the loudest? And, of course, that evil, worthless Federal Reserve System that has caused this problem in the first place. Well, the globalists would. So I call the bluff of those who call us conspiratorial. Show us. Show us what would happen. Who would scream the loudest if we got rid of those awful, withdrew from those awful globalist statist organizations? We'd all be much better off. So I have a guest tonight, a young lad who's been on here before, and he's coming back on. We're going to discuss current events, the job market, things he sees. He's a Ron Paul supporter. He's sort of a new friend to Austrian economics. He was born in Barbados, I think. His name is Angad. He comes from an Indian background. And longtime friend of mine, and he will be joining the Mighty PK. The office is contacting him, so hopefully he'll be on soon. And his generation, he knows what it's like with this damn job market and what lies ahead. So, and with that, let's bring the young lad on. Angad, are you out there?
Hey, how's it going?
PK here. Welcome back to Third Stream View. Would you like some tea or coffee?
Yeah, why not? Let's get
it. Well, good. Good for you, because it's self-service, kid.
Yeah.
Is your phone charged up?
Yeah, it's pretty charged up here.
There you go. So are you charged up to speak with the Mighty PK?
Yeah, I guess, try to make it as best as possible here. I think I might actually coming down with... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I appreciate you staying up a little later to match wits with me.
Oh, no problem.
I think we spoke about a month ago.
Yep.
And I'm glad you came back on. So we were talking about... we're going to pick up where we left off last time. We spoke about several things. We spoke about Ron Paul. We spoke about the job market. We spoke about Obama. So let's get to something right away that affects kids your age and even younger. As you know, a lot of kids are graduating without any kind of jobs that are commensurate to their talents, and they're moving home. So maybe the quality of waiters and waitresses will go up because of the competition for those jobs from college graduates.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you are in grad school now.
Yep, that's correct. Got a couple more semesters left.
What are you majoring in?
MBA. I got my MBA in kind of going the route for finance and management.
Uh-huh. And business. And you have an undergrad in telecommunications?
In communication, so kind of more on the media side.
And you've done some radio work before in sports?
Yeah, I've done a little bit in sports, a little bit too for, we had a radio station on campus and, kind of helped out more on the PR side. But eventually, once in a while I would get on, the shows here and there.
Uh-huh. Well, I have no experience or training in radio and TV, so
right.
I just try to get my gear working and I speak into a microphone.
Right.
But I speak truth to power, and I hopefully enlighten people with also including my shameless humor, but my razor-sharp wit and hopefully intellectual accuracy about things. And so that's what I do. I don't have any of that training. If I had a regular station and whatnot, I would need help from underlings like you who know how all this stuff works.
Right.
But don't have my great mind at the moment.
Yeah.
Although you are much smarter than me, I'll give you this. I'm an idiot in math and science. You're very good at that. And, good for you. I hope you do well. But however, this is one of the first generations of which you're in who may not do better or have it better than their parents because of the economy.
Yep, absolutely.
And absolutely because of the Federal Reserve, by the way.
Yeah.
So you appreciate Ron Paul's attack on the Federal Reserve, his relentless opposition to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the guy's very honest and upfront right from the get-go. And, I mean, that's just something that, you know, a lot of young people can relate to. It's none of this sleazy stuff that you get with, you know, the Democrats or the Republicans.
Well, he continues to draw huge crowds at college campuses of young people and their parents and others.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know, and, of course, he's from Texas. And he's retiring after this, when he finishes this term. But his main thing now is, you know, he's still in the race, but he wants to make a difference. He's got a lot of delegates, so he's going to get a speaking slot probably in August. But, you know, they, if you heard any of my monologue, you know, they don't really want him. The powers that be, they don't want him. The war party, of both parties are the war party. They want more war. They want more foreign interventionism.
And what's it that you refer to with the Democrats and Republicans? It's the
one government
monster.
Party with two heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings.
Yeah.
And both of them promote the Republicans promote, now check out my terminology on this, kid. The Republicans promote the warfare welfare state. The Democrats promote the welfare warfare state. Mm-hmm. Together, they keep the welfare, warfare, warfare, welfare state marching forward. No comment from you?
No, I'm just, taking it in.
Good. You should. So that's what they do. And again, fascism, which they both pretty much espouse, is not opposed to the welfare state. I can't stand Obama, and I can't stand Romney. Romney is the white Obama, Obama being the black Bush. So they're both Obama, Romney. Trying to figure out a different word for it. There's other slang words for the two of them.
Yeah.
But they both agree on, you know, they want to expand the military, they're expanding the wars, there's more war. They're big government. Romney is a big government Republican. He's a rhino, Republican in name only. I think of him as an oily, stuffed shirt, used car salesman. No offense to other used car salesmen, but that's how he comes off. And I don't think the young people are going to dig him. And he's such a square plastic guy. I'll take him on any day in economics, foreign policy, and in history, and even political science. You know, he's just such a stuffed shirt when I see this guy. So, what sad choices. Is he the best that America can do? Is he the best they can come up with? And I believe that Obama will win by a small victory in the fall, because Romney cannot beat Obama. Obama has too many of the haves and the have-nots, and all those he's bought off with more welfare and food stamps and extended unemployment, quote-unquote, insurance.
Right.
So I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Explain to me, though, I think you had mentioned that Romney's dad you were kind of aligned with, though.
His father was a better man. Mm-hmm. So, and I'd like to tell him that to his face. But and, of course, Romney's a big supporter of Israel. You know, Obama is more than you think, or more than we're led to believe. And I know a lot of American Jews are down on him for supposedly not supporting Israel, or, you know, saying that Israel should go back to their 67 borders, which I clearly agree with. Mm-hmm. But don't let it fool you. He's a big supporter of the Israeli lobby behind the scenes. And Obama is a big supporter and reaper of the donations from Wall Street, which he purports to, you know, battle publicly. But it's just such a charade, and it's all staged anyway. And, of course, you know, I don't know if you heard – did you hear my monologue at all before I came in? I don't know if you had the station on.
I didn't get to catch that.
Yeah, because the CIA is very heavily involved in all this sort of stuff. And I see, again, that interestingly enough, and we can probably figure out what's going to happen to him on this, is that Jesse Ventura, who never gives up – is we'll know in a couple weeks of his show the conspiracy theory will be allowed to continue. You know, he's got no lack of material when it comes to government conspiracies, and he's got like 15 to 16 of them already done, and he says he can think of at least 30 more he wants to do. So, yeah. You know, and as he says from this colonel, I think a retired colonel that he's a follower of, Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who said, mm-hmm. nothing just happens, everything's planned, and I certainly believe that.
Yeah.
You're a fan of Jesse's, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy who kind of tells it like it is, quite a
he's
character.
He's living in Mexico.
Course.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame him.
Yeah, and I mean, definitely got to, you know, respect Jesse for coming out there and calling it like it is, but, you know, I'm sure that a lot of the other greedy politicians have some other ideas with him, but, you know, definitely got to tip your hat off to him.
Well, so in taking my hat off to you now, young man, yeah. What do you see as a job prospect, or what do you see in your immediate future? And when you graduate and you get your master's in what, marketing and finance, is it?
Actually, it's management and finance.
Management and finance. What do you see happening? And have you spoken to any MBA grads? And what is the job market like for those folks who graduate, for example, in what you're going to graduate in? And by the way, I'm very pro the courses that you're taking, you know, management, business management, you know, marketing and finance. I'm very pro that. But what is it? What are the job prospects looking like?
You know, I guess it's kind of you know, tough to pinpoint. I mean, obviously each you know, class has their own kind of feedback with it. You've kind of seen stories where people have you know, done their MBAs but aren't getting anything out of it. Other situations you're seeing where people are, you know, getting something out of it. So, I mean, it's just kind of you know, which coin are you going to get? Which side of the coin are you going to get? But I mean, certainly for our generation, it's not kind of an easy cakewalk. I mean, you know,
right.
We would go back 10 or 15 years ago, and if you had a master's degree, I mean, people would be knocking on your doorstep asking you to come work for them, but that just doesn't seem to be the case in today's time.
Yeah, that's sad but true. I was just wondering if you had any input as to what the, you know, employment horizon is for, say, someone who's going to graduate, let's say, next month with what you have, you know, where all that's headed. But I definitely think you did the right thing. Like my grandpa used to say, you know, when you study business, you can do a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, there's different.
And since you live in Texas, mm-hmm. Texas is a pretty good job creation state. Or apparently there's people moving to Texas from California because California is so expensive and out of control. And so some of the other states are absorbing California residents or and or talent, and maybe you know, maybe Texas will be have something for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely, you're right about that too. And I know we had this conversation before about you know, folks moving out from California, you know, going on the road in the morning and you see quite a few folks from California, a lot of the license plates coming in. So
oh really,
lately at yeah, and lately I've been seeing quite a bit for even New Jersey and New York. So, you know, folks from the East Coast are even moving out here. Quite a big crop coming out here now.
So do you still long for the Northeast?
You know, I guess there's a little bit of both with that. As you said, there's a lot better of a situation here with the market. Of course, in Houston, there's, you know, quite a few companies in the energy side. Which is kind of beneficial for a young MBA student, but you know, you just hope that within the next couple of years that there might be some sort of recovery in the Northeast, but it's not really showing any signs of you know, a heartbeat or a pulse or anything like that.
Right.
You know, a lot of my friends are still out there and, you know, doing much worse off than even some of the folks here in Texas.
Well, I would think that out in the Northeast, especially, you're a smaller fish in a bigger pond.
Yeah.
Now,
right.
do you miss the snow?
Yeah, I guess you know, of course.
You didn't mind it, huh? Because you kind of grew up with it out there.
The snow and cold weather, but I mean, there's a lot of good things going on out here too. So, just kind of going after what we've kind of talked about for a while too. That there's a lot, you know, out here in Texas. I mean. go 2 hours here in San Antonio, go another 2 hours here in Austin, or drive up 4 hours here in Dallas, and you know, it just seems like there's a lot to do out here.
Well, I like Texas, and if I was you, I would, you know, I would try to stick it out there. Now, let's say, for example, if you went to your ancestral homeland with an MBA in India, how would your job prospects be there?
I guess maybe more so along the lines with having family out there and, you know, a lot of close friends. I think, you know, it looks pretty good out there. And India's market is kind of doing a lot better in terms of, you know, where it's progressing on a long-term basis than the U.S. So the only thing that you hope, though, is that they don't fall into the same habits that the U.S. market did with, you know, the Keynesian way of thinking. So that's something that certainly India would have to tread a little bit carefully on, but of course, right now things are looking really good and looking bright out there.
Even in India?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know that going to college in India is very competitive, very, you know, staunch, and I would think that you coming from the outside, even if your Hindi is spot on, that you would have maybe trouble getting a good job because it's so competitive there.
Yeah, I guess and that is a good point, too. I mean, especially in the IT industry, there is quite a bit of competition, but I think sometimes coming back with an international perspective, you know, they kind of value that. So I think that would be kind of a benefit for me, you know, going into there. Of course, lots of family are out there in Mumbai and Delhi, and definitely a lot of opportunities with family to help them out, too.
Well, I'm not talking about mooching off your extended family overseas there, kid. I'm talking about getting you a job over there.
Yeah. I mean, but there's a lot of companies out there, too. I mean, if you look at Bangalore, there's a lot of the American companies based out of there. And, I mean, certainly a lot of prospects out there, of course, you know, for folks that are willing to relocate out there and work there for a few years. So certainly that is kind of a benefit with having a little bit of an international experience to it.
So with your American background, that might help you out. What do you mean your international experience? What, because you could find India on a map or Barbados on a map? Is that your international experience?
A little bit of that, and I guess a little bit of, you know, doing a little bit of traveling here to Europe and to Asia and just being very receptive to traveling and, you know, open to other cultures. I think that's going to be the biggest thing for a lot of the youngsters to adapt to in this day and age, is being kind of open to what's out there. You know, I mean, if there's an opportunity that might come in Japan or opportunity that might come in another country in Europe, certainly have to get out of your comfort zone and, you know, go for it.
Now, I know you've been to India a couple times. Have you been to Europe?
I've been to Europe a little bit. It's been quite some time, of course, more so when I was a teenager, but yeah.
Where were you?
There.
I don't recall you being in Europe. Where were you in Europe?
We were actually in Zurich. We had taken a trip briefly to Zurich, so we were up there for a bit, and of course, when I was a younger kid, I can't remember too much of it, but made a trip out to London, so.
All right. Well, speaking of your memory, Mr. International,
yeah.
If I had a globe right in front of you and I was standing next to you, or a world map, could you immediately find Switzerland?
I mean, I guess, yeah, if you had it out there, you know, I guess I'd be able to kind of pinpoint within the vicinity, but of course, might have to do a little bit of research on it. But yeah, I mean, I guess within the vicinity.
Could you find Korea?
Yeah.
Could you find Peru?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because, as I like to say sarcastically, though sadly true, is, as you know, and I don't mind repeating, is that I'm an American who actually knows world geography.
Mm-hmm.
No chuckle from you, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of amusing because I'm just thinking about it that, you know, you don't really get that in today's classes. I mean, in high school or even in undergraduate or almost on every level, I mean, they don't really go through that.
Not only is it the lost subject, but when I say this to things, if I'm traveling overseas, especially in Europe, and I'm speaking to somebody who speaks English, and I tell them that, it's like an immediate warming up. The curtain comes down, and they understand that, oh, he gets it.
Yeah.
you know, then, which adds on to that sad saying about war is God's way of teaching Americans geography.
Yeah. And they don't end up calling you a selfish pig then, right?
Well, no, not that they would anyway. Just like, it's like sort of like arrogant and clueless. I mean, they know how dumb so many Americans are as far as, you know, anything outside of their country. By the way, let me just break in here and say that if any of the multitudes, if any of the millions of my listeners would want to call in and talk to us or challenge me or comment or have a question, the number here is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. And the mighty On God is here too. My friend who is is working full time, plus he's going to grad school. So he's working his butt off, and he'll be guaranteed of a nice service sector job in the near future.
Kind of reminded by Homer Simpson from that cartoon.
Or you could always try to find a nice Texas girl or a rich girl from Texas or a rich Mexicano girl, and then you'd have your work cut out for you. You'd sort of be a piece of meat for a rich girl.
Hey, that'll work for me, a Southern Belle or
there you go.
Latin girl.
I like Southern girls. I like Southern girls because they're still into being women.
Yeah.
You know, there's not this competition with, the job market and all this other stuff. You know, that's what I don't dig. That's why I like foreign women, too. They're still into being women.
Yeah. So I think I'm kind of more along the lines with you on that with foreign women, you know. But, I guess Southern belles have their perks, too, right?
Yeah, now what about, say, the local Hindi girls that you know or have been around? Will they give you the time of day? What are they like?
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's kind of a good crop. You know, of course, I'm from family backgrounds from northern India. But I guess there's a good crop. You know, I actually attended an event at the main campus here a few weeks ago, and it's kind of for the Punjabi Society, and lots of good-looking girls, quite a few.
Are they friendly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know.
Is that where that guy rained down your parade?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. He went in and blocked everything, right?
Well, better him than you.
Yeah.
You know. So I went up to a girl once when I was on a ship in the disco, and I said, look, when these guys are done boring you, I'll come back and talk to you. And she said, I'm bored.
An immediate raise of the hand and.
I tried that one out and it worked. I just said to her, you know, hey, you know, when they're done boring you, I'll come and talk to you. So she said, oh, I'm bored. So she was very friendly. Yeah, she was very friendly. So now what line of work are you in right now? What are you doing right now? What's your job?
I guess I'm doing kind of on the side with IT recruiting and human resources manager, but doing it for a small company. So definitely a lot to learn and. A lot to take from it, but certainly has you know, its ups and downs for sure.
Well, yeah, I know you're not happy with the management, but you are getting some. You are learning from it. You're getting some knowledge from it, which you can take with you, right?
Yeah, I guess you know, kind of going along the lines of, you know, some of the stuff that we've kind of discussed amongst ourselves, and you know, some of the management classes that I've taken too. It's just kind of an eye opener for me of how, you know, to react if I'm in that position, if I'm granted that position a few years from now, where I'm, you know, called to be in a leadership position. You know, certainly there's a lot of things that are an eye-opener for you, and, you know, what things to do, what things not to do, how to motivate, you know, your employees. And, yeah, I mean, just a lot of a learning process for me, but, you know, taking a lot of what I want to do, too.
Well, it helps to have good people skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm always working at mine. And when I send an email to my peeps in business, the things that I do, if I have to be critical, I'm very selective. I'm getting better at it, at how I choose my words
right.
to get things over. Because just tweaking a word here or there, perhaps a pronoun, a verb, an adjective, you'd be surprised how much better you can, you know, slide that same message in or your displeasure about something without upsetting them too much, but knowing that you're concerned about it and something needs fixing, you know, mm-hmm. it's how you go about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess it's, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Well, it's the information you must get out there. It's just how you say it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And depending on the person or the situation, if it's somewhere if you don't care about burning a bridge, or somebody's a total jerk and it's caused you a lot of grief, or your peeps, or you know, then you can put the hammer down and not care, because that's how it is. You know, so and so is a jerk or a jerkette, and their BS ain't gonna be tolerated anymore.
Absolutely.
You know, so do you see many Ron Paul signs up where you live, or on cars, or around town?
Quite a few supporters out here, of course, in Texas, in his home state. But I guess there's some people that are still kind of swayed, you know, between Obama and Romney, and then you have some of the people from the last election for McCain, out there too. But actually the other day I was heading to work and got into the parking garage, and there were two cars next to each other, and one said with a bumper sticker, "Miss me yet?" And it had a picture of George Bush.
Ugh.
And on the other side it had a thing of Obama, "Yes, we can." And pretty close by there was a Ron Paul supporter. So I haven't seen any of the stickers, I think he sent me one of those stickers that said Ron Paul was right. So I haven't caught any of those yet, but still.
Well, I hope you put it on your vehicle.
Yeah.
Is it on your window or your bumper?
Actually, I had it on my old CRV, but, on my Civic, I don't have it on there right now. But you probably have to, send me another one there.
Did you get another vehicle?
Yeah. I actually just got Honda Civic recently.
Did you get that through the folks, or was it a hand-me-down? Did you get a used one?
It's got a new one, so brand new.
What year is it?
It's 2010.
Man, it's not brand new.
I've had it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You didn't buy it brand new.
Well, no, actually, I did get it a couple of years ago,
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I got it.
See, if I was in your situation, I wouldn't buy a new car. I would buy a used car, because cars depreciate in value.
Right.
And
right.
You don't need anything. You need something that's good enough to get you back and forth to work, and something mm-hmm. decent to take a chick out in. But you don't want to be a slave to a car. You want to pay down those college debts.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is it's not too bad in terms of the payments that we're looking at on a monthly basis, and basically, I guess Hondas are kind of a good brand of cars, so you can definitely have them for quite some time and still be satisfied for them. That CRV we've had for, how long? You've kind of drove it a few times too yourself, but pretty satisfied with the Honda vehicles.
Uh-huh. How is it on gas?
It's not too bad. From time to time, I guess it can be a little bit of a, thing for the distance of where my job is, but certainly not as bad as some of the other gas-guzzling vehicles.
Yeah. Well, I always thought Honda makes great cars.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, I can name all the Japanese companies. Can you?
Yeah. I guess there's, enlighten me here.
Okay. Of course, you've got their big three, if you would. You know, of course, Nissan, and then you have a Honda,
uh-huh.
and of course, Toyota,
mm-hmm.
okay? Then you got Suzuki,
yeah,
Mazda,
right,
Subaru,
yep,
Isuzu, Daihatsu, Mitsubishi.
Yeah. What about... I don't know if I'm off here, but Hyundai?
You're way off. That's Korean.
That's Korean. Okay.
Nissan, Honda. Hyundai and Kia is Korean. Nissan,
okay.
Honda, Toyota, Suzuki, Mazda, Subaru, Isuzu, Daihatsu, Mitsubishi. So that makes it 9 companies that I know of. Now, some of them might be tied into each other, but there's 9 that I know of. And, of course, some of them build have factories here that produce the cars. I know Indiana has, I think, Subaru. I, myself, if I bought a Jap car, I would prefer one made in Japan.
Right.
Because of the attention to detail and, you know, their the quality that they have. So that is something that I would, you know.
Well, it even seems like the parts are much cheaper, you know, from the...
Yeah.
They don't try to, you know, I guess... do as much so like the American companies where, you know, you're paying a boatload just to get one part replaced.
Yeah, I mean, parts are ridiculous. I bought a part, different topic, I bought a part from my pool last week, the part where the hose that goes into the pool vac. It's a PVC piece. I thought it would be like under $12. It was $40. It has a little door with a spring on it. And the little door has a little catch on it where it goes in the hose. It holds the hose on because my hose kept getting disconnected from the side of the pool. So, you know, when he rings it up, I couldn't believe it. I said, "You got to be kidding me. You know, are you sure?"
Yeah.
I said, "Man," and I paid him cash. I said, "Man, I hope you realize I'm not going to be able to eat tonight." But,
yeah.
But I was just kidding him. But I was shocked at the price. So,
Yeah.
What are you going to do? They had me, you know.
It kind of reminds me, actually, of the Denny's commercial. I don't know if you've seen it. There's this old guy on there, and the guy's like, "Okay, that'll be like $10 for your breakfast," and it's like a little small plate. And the guy gets really mad and gives him Monopoly money. And the guy goes, "Okay, well, I can't accept that." And he goes, "Well, why?" And then, because that's not real money. And he says, "Well, that's not a real breakfast."
Yeah. Well, I haven't eaten at Denny's for about 25 years. Ask me why.
Why is it?
Because 25 years ago, when I did some additions on my rental properties, and I have all college kids, one of them worked at Denny's.
Mm-hmm.
And after he talked about some of their less than hygienic things that they'd pick off the floor, do this and that, I never ate at one. Not that I ate at them, you know, anyway, hardly, but I just stay away from Denny's.
Yeah, no, I've heard quite a few horror stories, but...
Have you?
Yeah, I mean, not just there, but, I mean, I guess that's with any kind of chain, you know, today itself, but, you know, I guess, how do you improve that? That's the main thing.
By not going.
Yeah, now, I mean, I guess,
Do you have Baker Square? Sorry, do you have, of course, I like those. But do you have Cracker Barrel in Texas?
Yeah, absolutely. We have one right near our house, actually.
You ever had their pecan pancakes?
Yeah, I think quite some time ago. You know, I haven't eaten out here at the Cracker Barrel, but I know back home in Pennsylvania, we used to go quite a bit. So I remember getting some of those during breakfast.
How about, do you have Bob Evans?
Bob Evans, no, we don't have it out here, but I remember actually made a few trips to there, right? I think we went a few times with you, too.
So you had those out when you lived in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I think when we would, you know, come out to visit you, I guess on the road trip, we would stop at the Bob Evans.
We stopped at one, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like pancakes?
Yeah.
I eat them occasionally, you know, they're kind of rather fattening, a lot of carbs, but I love those, they're butter pecan, I like the Baker Square butter pecan pancakes, I like them well done, with real maple syrup and real butter.
Yeah.
You know, margarine is one of the worst things you can eat.
Yeah.
It's just one step away from plastic, and my chiropractor told me probably over 20 years ago, if he said, if you want to eat margarine, you might as well eat plastic.
Yeah.
So I never forgot that, and I never liked it anyway. I wasn't raised on it, and I'm glad I always stayed away from it, because we always had butter.
Well, I guess you and the folks have been pretty big on the organic selection, too, at least within the recent years. You guys have been pretty big on that. You guys have been emphasizing to me to make sure that I get something organic versus having something injected with steroids in it.
Yeah, well, I can't. That's pretty, yeah, of course. But that's kind of hard to avoid. So yeah, I'm just hoping for the best. And I will adapt. I just hope I don't get cancer or any other BS, you know, as I'm continuing to age gracefully. But I try to do the primal diet. Are you hip to the primal diet?
No, I actually haven't heard too much about it. What's it?
It's like the caveman diet. It's the concept of a caveman to have a lean body. A caveman ate whatever he could kill with a sharp stick, meat and fish, and whatever he could pull off a tree or a branch, fruit and vegetables and nuts. So right. I try to cut back on the carbs. I try to cut back on the bread and rice. Yes, I like that stuff. I eat it, but I don't eat a lot of it, and I cut back on it. And, you know, I'm big on, chicken, fish. I love pork. I like beef, but, you know, we're talking protein versus all the carbs. And I don't eat a lot of sweets. Sometimes I go to Steak and Shake and have a milkshake, but I don't eat – or sometimes I buy a pumpkin pie and I just eat the pumpkin. I throw some nuts on it. I eat pumpkin. I don't eat all the crust. But I don't eat a lot of sweets and no soft drinks.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, I guess, you know, sweets I can't avoid as much. So, I mean, I got a sweet tooth. But, you know, when it comes to sodas, I try to avoid that as much as possible. But
you should.
It's a little bit difficult when you're, I guess, in between the semester there and you have exams piled up and, you know, you got a lot on your plate with work as well. Then I guess some of those old habits start to, you know, slip in and, show themselves again.
Well, just keep the cake and the soft drinks off your plate.
Yeah.
That's the problem, all the carbs, because they turn into sugar. So, and this country has a diabetes epidemic.
Yeah.
You know, that's true. American exceptionalism. So, you know, I don't want that. I certainly don't want diabetes. So I have basically no alcohol. I don't even know if I've had a whole drink this year so far.
Right.
You know, every now and then I would have a glass of wine, but I've never liked alcohol. And I'm glad I don't drink. I'm much better off.
Yeah, I guess you got to kind of limit it with that, too. I mean, you'll get a big beer belly otherwise, but, you know, try to keep it in minimum. Of course, you can't always avoid it, you know, being a college student, but you got to try to peel back as much as possible with it.
How about you? Do you drink a beer?
Yeah, I mean, from time to time, of course, you know, I don't mind a good beer, but, you know, of course, seeing how some of the people hammer it and how much weight they gain, of course, that's a little bit frightening.
But you only drink Kingfisher beer. Only Kingfisher. That's a big bottle. I've seen those big bottles.
Yeah.
Man. So, what else is on the horizon now? You've got like another year of school, basically.
Yeah, I got about. A year, as you're saying, but you know, pretty much about 2 to 2.5 more semesters and taking a few classes in the summer and then just trying to get it done here, but certainly just trying to keep the options open and, you know, see where it goes. But pretty close to the end here with the program, so just kind of happy that it's moving along and just ready to kind of get it done with.
Well, I, of course, do not want to rain on your parade or your generation's parade, but just based on this, it'll help you maybe look to the future and adjust more. But
yeah.
I think the economy continues to get worse. I think unemployment is much higher than they say it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So as long as you, as long as you understand that and can work within those parameters, maybe you can suss out or find your niche, as you proceed with your degree somehow. You know, I feel sorry for your generation, but please don't blame me because I never voted for those idiots. I always voted libertarian, and I opposed the wars. I opposed everything that has made your generation's life more difficult. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I know actually we were having this conversation too about, you know, when I was talking to you about possibly going back for the PhD and, know, funny enough, I know you were telling me just tread a little bit carefully with it. And, you know, I was talking to one of my professors the other day. Actually, they had an event for the school, and, you know, I was getting his perspective on it. And, you know, basically his words were, honestly, there's a lot of kissing up, you know. Plain and simple, you have to do a lot of kissing up. And, I mean, it's not, you know, what you're bringing to the table. It's whose rear end that you're kissing.
Well, that's pretty cool that he was so upfront with you about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Well, you know, PhD piled higher and deeper.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's actually giving me a perspective, too, of, I guess, when he was doing his MBA and then, you know, going for his PhD. And he was just giving me an example of, you know, one of his professors that he just didn't get along with, but he still had to, you know, kind of suck it up and, you know, kind of kiss up for a while, which he didn't really like to do. But, of course, he's in a better spot right now.
Well, if I was going to get a doctorate, if I was going to spend that much time in school, I'd rather be a medical doctor than a PhD. I'd rather, you know, I'd rather have that together. But I think that if you, you know, continue to do well in school and can hang in there, who knows? But I just don't see it getting better. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think it's going to. Because, and mostly because they want to spend more. Like I heard that idiot Obama say the other day on the radio that he was telling other European countries and something to the effect that this is not the time to stop spending. Government should spend more, keep spending. I mean, that's his mentality.
Yeah.
To expand the welfare state. You know, he's never run a business or had to meet a payroll. You know, so I don't dwell on my dislike for Obama like Republicans do because, I mean, you know, so many do because my problem is with the whole Republican, well, both parties. But, you know, we Ron Paul Republicans, we want to reform the Republican Party and bring it back to its Jeffersonian constitutional roots instead of its idiotic neocon, pro-war, spread democracy by gunpoint BS.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's definitely true.
Well, of course it is, because I said it.
Yeah.
So do you like my cut-to-the-chase mentality? I mean, I just try to get to the cut-to-the-chase and, you know, as blunt as I have to be, just bang, you know, it's like, what are we beating around the bush for?
Yeah, but I mean, you wish that, you know, more Americans would think like that too, and, you know, maybe if people were more, you know, I guess, aware of these things going on, that maybe we aren't running into these problems where, you know, we got just pretty much Democrats and the Republicans playing their little games.
True, but more government sure ain't going to fix things.
Yeah.
You know, more policies, more of this, more of that, more, you know, whenever you subsidize something, you get more of it. Government
yep.
cheese, got cheese and butter giveaways, you know, all that kind of stuff, because they subsidize it, and then you know, it's more of it is produced. Just like when you subsidize unemployment and you subsidize poverty, you get more of it. It's not because
yep.
we don't hate people. We hate what the welfare state is doing and the dependency it causes. And meanwhile, the government policies, heavy overregulation and taxes and, you know, details and restrictions, that makes it harder for more job creation. So then there is more unemployment or apathy, and, you know, it's just sort of a vicious circle. But I blame the central state most. I blame the, you know, the federal government for most of this. People blame a lot of the effects of it, but they're not looking at the source.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course.
Where is the source? Cut the head of the damn snake off. You know, where is the source?
Right. No, I mean, I guess that's the case with Bush and Obama, of course, being puppets.
And who are they puppets for?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much the Fed.
Well, yeah, but I believe that they're puppets for the New World Order, the Illuminati,
yeah.
The globalist crowd who's calling the shots.
Yeah, that too. I mean, of course, that's kind of a big theme here, but, you know, certainly, you know, unless we really want change, you know, we're just going to be stuck with, you know, the same old Band-Aid effect with Obama and Bush and now with Romney in the picture, it doesn't look like things are getting any better.
That's a good way of looking at it when you said a Band-Aid effect.
Yeah.
Because, and also these bastards and these people in Congress, they retire. There's a lot of millionaires in Congress. I'm not down on wealth per se, but they get it politically. They've earned it politically, or schmoozing, or they're not real free enterprisers. And of course, they retire at your expense with their nice, fat, comfortable pensions and all the money that they've made in their shady dealings and whatnot. Of course, it's all wrapped up in patriotism and flag waving, but most of us ain't buying it. Or we ain't buying it anymore because the game is up.
I mean, it's a blind worship. I mean, as you said,
hey, that's a good one.
Yep. But I mean, honestly, I mean, it's just a bunch of people are just waving the flag around, thinking, beating their chests around. But really, it's do they know where we're going? I mean, as you've been pointing out, I mean, how's it going to be for the economy? Are we really progressing, or are we really just taking more steps back? You know.
Well, you and I know where we're going. We're going downhill, are we not? Steadily downhill.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, right now, I mean, you're looking at people who are even older than me that are still jobless. So, of course, you don't hear about those stories as much as media tries to pinpoint it.
Well, let me ask you this. Power is a scary thing, holding the reins of power. But let's say that you had the ability to implement policy or change. What would you do? How would you turn things around?
You know, I guess it just
if you had the magic wand and you could fix the economy, what would you do?
I mean, you know, just kind of looking at, from an honest perspective and even from Dr. Paul's, views, I mean, just really, cut the inflation out. I mean, cut the big spending. Let's stop spending. Let's become more conscious about how much we're spending out there and, you know, become a little bit more, assertive about that versus just being in the mentality of, we want it all. We always have to have it all. And, you know, that greed kind of creates more problems. So, of course, that would be the biggest change. And, I mean, of course, the foreign policy that Dr. Paul has, opening up with other countries like Cuba, Iran, Korea. I mean, pretty much just being open and not, ruling with an iron fist, saying, look, we're going to come after you. Like, we need to eliminate that attitude. I mean, plain and simple, that needs to change. That mentality needs to change. And, of course, Dr. Paul's the only one up there, preaching it.
Good for you, because it's mostly kids your age and, well, a little younger and a little older who are dying and fighting all these stupid wars.
Yep.
And Romney, that idiot, he'd be happy to attack Iran. But he's saber-rattling, and, what does he care? He's not going. I mean, he was pro-Vietnam War, and meanwhile, he avoided it. All these chicken hawk neocon bastards, they don't go. They want somebody else's kids to die. So what happens in war, usually, is that the, blue-collar, working-class people of one country are killing the people in their same sort of class and social agenda in the other country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the war pigs, you ever heard that Black Sabbath song?
Which one?
War Pigs.
It's called War Pigs. No, I haven't.
Generals gather in their masses just like witches at black masses.
Oh, no, I've heard that. I remember.
Although the generals don't make the war. They don't make the wars, it's the politicians. But they, in this country, the generals and the politicians, they move back and forth between positions and jobs in the military-industrial complex, the weapons procurers, that crowd, once they're out of office, they work, they're back and forth in this. And it's just a vicious circle, and it's causing so much death and destruction. But they don't care. It's wrapped up in the flag, and, they're pushing this crap.
But how much more can, people take of that? I mean, honestly, how much more can we go on trying to start these pointless wars? I mean, where's even the money for it?
That is an excellent question because, the Romneys, they'll always have money. And the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, that crowd, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of us, no. So yep. I I'm thinking that that there could be civil war between the haves and the have-nots, and or food riots.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, if the stores close, if there's a national emergency or something and the stores close, I mean, they could be out of goods within a couple of hours easily.
Yeah, but, I mean, it leads back to all the stuff with the New World Order. I mean, pretty much, you know, spoon-feeding you for a bit and then, you know, cutting it off. And, I mean, people are pretty much running around like hamsters in a cage. They don't know what to do. I mean,
and most people, you know, yeah, they don't know clearly who to blame either, or the source of their problems. So that's that scatterbrain mentality. But Americans have never been without like that. So if that happens, they're going to be really paranoidal, if that's a word. It's going to be it's not good. And I don't see it getting better, on God. I just don't see it getting better.
Yeah.
So the best thing you can do is continue your schooling, hang on to your job till you get something better, and then eventually when you get your master's, maybe something will open up for you. Maybe things will get better by then. But just plan that since you and I both know it's probably getting worse, plan on what's your move going to be, you know, how to deal with that. Where's your niche going to be, you know?
Right.
And if you got to still live at home for a while, that's okay too, because you want to have some comfort and some security. You don't want to be knocking yourself out paying rent or struggling somewhere if you don't have a decent job or income. So, again, I empathize with your generation, and I don't know what to say except how I would change things, you know, based on sort of like what you said. We got to stop with the inflation destroying the value of our money, you know, all these things they're doing, the wars. You know, everything they're doing, I would basically do the opposite of.
Yep.
You know, I don't see it. And this idiot Obama, I mean, either side, I challenge anybody with themselves or a family business to go ahead and spend, say, 1,000% more than you take in and continue to borrow thousands at the same time and see how long you can get away with that. So your reckoning day comes, because if you do that, you probably get prosecuted and go to jail. But the federal government keeps continuing to do it. I say the federal government because the state governments can't print money. They also can't declare war or station people overseas.
Yep.
You know? So it just, you know, it doesn't look good. I don't see it getting better. I will either write Ron Paul's name in, or vote Libertarian for Gary Johnson, or like 2008, I didn't vote at all because I couldn't stand the Libertarian Party candidate, that jerk, Bob Barr. I can't believe they nominated him. I couldn't stand Obama, and I couldn't stand John McCain. And let me ask you this, young man. You think you're going to see many hope and change signs during this election? I don't think so. I don't think so. They won't dare put that out. Their latest BS, I think his wife said it, the first lady said that, well, change takes time.
Yeah.
Well, I know that, but they're making it worse because they've spent more and they've expanded the power more. So, you know, just Bushisms at a faster pace.
I mean, the biggest thing, too, is we don't have time anymore. I mean,
I know.
We've got to stop this madness and, you know, cut it out now and, you know, start getting smart about these things.
Well, that would help, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Where's the common sense?
Well, I've heard that common sense is genius in its work clothes. You ever heard that one?
No.
Common sense is genius in its work clothes. Well, hey, listen, young man, thanks for coming on the show and sharing your ideas on the outlook of thing. I know it's been kind of, I've kind of been doom and gloomy about it, but why should I sugarcoat it for you, you know? Well, if you and I both know that things are getting worse, why would we sugarcoat it for each other? Again, I would just say to try to plan your future based on what you know is going to happen. And now that you're more clued in also to Austrian economics and the business cycle and what the Fed causes, you can more hopefully plan accordingly.
I guess you kind of nailed it right there. I mean, there is some optimism from what you're saying that coming up with a different game plan. I mean, you just can't stick in the same kind of playbook. You got to do something different, and certainly having these opportunities with Austrian economics and learning about Dr. Paul and about the Libertarian Party, it certainly gives a new perspective on things and how to approach it, as a young MBA student.
That's true. And so you're poised with your generation, when you guys take over or, start running things, hopefully you'll still have this knowledge and background that I have so graciously bestowed upon you.
Yep.
And with that, my friend, I'm going to say good night and thank you very much, On God, for joining me here on Third Stream View. I'm your humble host, PK, and I'm here every Monday evening on bbsradio.com, station 2, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. Good night, everyone, and I'll talk to you next week.